This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This is the Besotted Pride of West London podcast. And as you can tell by my delivery, I'm feeling rather relaxed. I had a couple of weeks off from Premier League football, which was getting a little bit frantic, you know, with this sort of kind of near to the bottom of the table malarkey that's going down. Personally, I just thought a little break from the football, it's going to do me, myself, and probably all Brentford fans a lot of good, and it has. And as you can tell, I am now very relaxed, sitting here in the virtual joint with Lainey, who is also very relaxed, aren't you, Lainey? How are you?
I'm good, thank you very much, Bill. Yeah, it's as you said, it's Burnley seems quite a long time ago now, and we're going to talk about that. It was a calamitous afternoon, but you know, it seems like, you know, it came at the right time. You know, a few positives. We'll talk about this. You know, Ivan playing for England and scoring. And we know now that's going to be a 9-game season rather than a 9-month season. And we know what we really need to do to make sure that we keep our heads above water and retain our place in the top flight for next season.
But do we? I mean, do we know exactly what we need to do? I mean, does Thomas Frank know exactly what we need? What exactly do we need, Lainey?
Well, we need to get more points than the teams below us. That's what we need to do. But we need to win 2 or 3 games, don't we? And that's about two or three games. No, we need to. You know, we don't know. Okay, maybe
you don't know exactly what we need, do we?
We kind of do, really. Yeah, we know what we're up against. We know literally that we're top of a bottom sort of six, and we need to just make sure that we stay above those below us. It's pretty simple. We just have to do better than everyone else below us, and not really worry about anything other than that. You know, we haven't got cups to worry about. We haven't got transfer deadlines to worry about. We're not going to lose any more players. We've actually got players coming back. You know, Brian Mbeumo came back against Burnley, and he was, you know, a huge shot in the arm. We've got Brian Mbeumo and Ivan Toney, our dream team, top two, to hopefully fire us the goals that we need. And we're playing sort of, you know, three of those below us as well. So we have to, you know, get at least a point, if not win all of those as well. So, yeah, we just have to focus on these 9 games, really. The rest of it, you know, what's gone before is going to be just a distraction now. It's, you know, we all wish we weren't in this position. But if we're going to be in this position, you know, at least we're at the head of the pack rather than, you know, looking to catch points up or having points deductions ourselves. We've got all of that to talk about. It's a lot messier behind us than it is in the Brentford camp at the moment.
Yeah, and part of the reason why, you know, we don't know exactly what we need is because, you know, we've got the Forest situation and the Everton situation where there's been point deductions, but then you don't know how many more point deductions there may be or there might not be, or what's going to go on and what position they're going to be or not be, or if there's going to be appeals and whether or not they're going to get the points back that's deducted after the end of the season and all sorts of stuff. So I think part of the thing here, and we're going to maybe talk, we might talk about that a little bit later, is that you just got to concentrate on your own game. I mean, I've always turned around and said, like, let's just forget about Forest.
whatever point deduction they get is not by the by. I mean, I know a lot of people start to get really upset going, oh no, they didn't get enough point deductions, they should have got more. We shouldn't be relying on other teams getting point deductions. We should be doing our own thing and getting ourselves out of peril as it is. So forget about Nottingham Forest for now.
I'm getting not angry is the wrong word, but what I'm getting kind of like scratching my head about is the narrative seems to be all about Everton and Forest fans and their clubs not being happy about the punishment for they've admitted that they've breached rules. We call it cheating. They've spent more money than they were allowed to in the same time period that other clubs have stuck by the rules and haven't cheated. They've cheated, we haven't cheated. The narrative should be more about how we feel about, you know, them breaching the rules and seeking an unfair advantage. I mean, what is quite humorous is the fact that they've spent more money than they should have done, but they're right at the bottom of the league. They're struggling to survive still. So they haven't spent more money very wisely. From a Brentford fans' point of view, from a Crystal Palace fans, Bournemouth, Fulham, you know, Luton especially, and Burnley and Sheffield United, they haven't cheated, and they could be going down. We could be going down, depending on the points and what happens for the rest of the season, because they've cheated. And I just think that, yeah, you're right, we shouldn't be relying on the misdemeanours and the kind of misfortunes elsewhere in the league. We should just sort ourselves out, and I still firmly believe we will do that. But I don't think it's not right that our situation isn't clear because theirs isn't. You know, we should have clarity now that, you know, we should be just confident in the fines and the points punishment is going to be sufficient to serve as a deterrent and actually be a punishment. You know, they actually need to pay for what they've done.
So, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, obviously, I've had quite a few protracted conversations with my Nottingham Forest chums because, you know, I've got chums in Nottingham Forest. And it's interesting, they accused me, stroke our club, of being tinpot, small or small time. It's always going to be a small club or small thinking club, is what they said. And why is the reason? Because they said, because you stuck within the rules, right? And they said to me, look, you're never going to compete against the top six if you continue to just kind of stick within the rules, right? And so when my argument, I said to them, well, to be fair, you know, everyone sort of said to us when we were in the Championship, you know, unless you actually spend lots of money and sell your stadium like Derby County and Sheffield Wednesday and all these teams did, you're never going to go up. And then we went up against the odds and completely confused everyone. So, of course, their argument then after that is like, oh, look at you, good old Brentford, sticking within the rules. Oh, aren't you so good? So it's almost like there's this really weird mentality that you have to, basically, you have to break the rules. It doesn't matter about, I mean, I thought like Gary Neville's argument's actually quite interesting. He's like, you know, if you, we're talking about basically Gary Neville on his fan show. Okay. And he was talking to Greg from Forza Garibaldi and on the overlap. Okay. Check it out. It's on YouTube now. It's really interesting. The last hour, check out from, you know, an hour in. For the last half an hour, and he was chatting to Greg quite a lot, and then he had also Luton and Everton fan there as well, and he was basically saying, look, you know, the rules are the rules, right? These are the rules, and do you want to, you know, at the end of the day, you basically just got out and broken them. He goes, do you think that's okay? And Greg turned around and said, well, I do think it's okay that we've broken the rules because we survived, because we needed to break the rules because we didn't have enough, we didn't have any players. Gary Neville's just going, so you would rather a club that you keep on talking about which got this great history and it's this great traditional club was quite happy to go and stick two fingers up at, you know, the Football League, the football, the FA, everything that football's all about, and also all the other clubs around you to turn around and say, we don't care about you. As long as we're okay and we survive, we will do anything we can do to get where we are. And I think that kind of sums up where we are. Chelsea and Man City, yeah, that's a different story altogether. But I think the problem is that when you start throwing those arguments into the pot, right, it starts to cloud the argument, because at the end of the day, yeah, they've done what they're going to do, and I'm sure they're going to get fined or whatever's going to happen to them, but that's not the point. The point is that there's still a number of other clubs around. We're not in the Forest, because Nottingham Forest are nowhere near Chelsea. They're nowhere near Man City. They're nearer to us. They're nearer to Bournemouth. They're nearer to Sheffield United. And none of those clubs are going around and cheating to try and see if they can get out of it. So why are Nottingham Forest any different? Why do they think that they can go around and break the rules? And at the moment now, their narrative is that we should all be joining together. So I could see them and Everton fans are joining together saying, we've both been done. We're both in this together. You know, let us fight against the top six and let all the fans come together from the other 14. Let's fight the top six. I'm sitting there thinking, well, this is quite interesting, but you know, the fight in the top six thing, you know, I'm cool there. But the fact is that you still cheated. And at the end of the day, is that if you stay up and Luton go down, how right is that? And interestingly, you've got the Everton fan and the Nottingham Forest fan on the same show, and they're sort of saying, yeah, we were stuck together, you know, we're brothers in arms, this, that, the other. And then the Everton fan turns around and goes, but you got a 2-point reduction in how many points you got. So if you stay up and we don't go down, I'm not very happy about that. So why am I against you? So at the end of the day, there's a really weird situation happening. And to me, I think it's very typical of football, where a lot of football clubs don't run like real businesses. They just kind of run like cloud cuckoo land. And then a lot of fans just buy into this nonsense of just kind of basically just kind of like, let's just live in this world that doesn't really exist, where you can do what you want to, buy whatever players you want to. You could just, you know, just run up ridiculous debts and everything like that. And I just think it's a load of nonsense myself, Laney.
Yeah, no, it's complete nonsense. You certainly don't want to go into, you know, collaboration with, you know, a collection of cheats. You know, it's like band of thieves. They've already admitted that they'll break the rules and they'll do whatever they feel is necessary to better their own football clubs. You know, you can't. Everyone's pitted against each other. I mean, and that's why the game's so great. But you know, all the clubs, whether the FFP rules are fit and proper or fit for purpose, is a kind of regardless. But everyone signed up to them, and so everyone sticks to the same rules. And if you break the rules, then you expect to get punished. You know, that shouldn't be an over simplistic way of looking at it. If the rules are there, then you stick to them, or you renegotiate and you get the rules changed. But every club who accepts the place in the Premier League agrees to a code of conduct, as it were. And if you break that code of conduct, it's an offence against everyone else. I hear the whataboutery and the kind of like, it's not fair. And, you know, if the Premier League is corrupt, but it's not. It's just bad management or intentionally corrupt management by the clubs that have been cited. And you know, I just have to go, you know, they have to be, if you break the rules, you have to be punished, otherwise you're taking the piss out of everyone that's playing by the rules.
Yeah, and just interestingly, just coming back to the point about Forest saying that they, you know, oh, we didn't have enough, you know, when we went out we had loads of loan players, so we lost our players, so we had to go and buy players. Listen, the reality is, right, if you ain't ready to go up, you know, I mean, last season, how many times on this podcast did I turn around and say to you, I didn't want us to go in the Europa League. I don't think we're ready to go in the Europa League. I don't think we're not Europa, but the Europa, whatever it is.
Yeah,
I said, we're not ready to go there. Maybe 2 or 3 or 4 years, because at the end of the day, it's about building and about building at a sustainable rate, right? And I didn't think that we would, if we went in, we'd be building at a sustainable rate. Now, the fact is that if Nottingham Forest were in the Championship, right, and all of a sudden they came from being the bottom, really great to be up there, up the top, and they've gone up there and they've got promoted, right, that's fine for them. But the fact is that if they realise that they haven't got the infrastructure really there to maintain that, they've got themselves 150 million, go back down again, take that money and rebuild, and then you go back like what other people do. Why do they have to feel that they come in the Premier League and before you know it, they've got to be competing with the top six or the top eight? That's just not how it works. If they went up, fair play to them. But if they ain't ready, like, you know, we went up and we had, you know, as we call it, Premier League ready, who was ready to fight and be able to maintain our position, in the first year of the Premier League. If Forest weren't ready to do that, but they've gone up, just accept it. Just go back down again and reform. And that's kind of how it works. But it's this whole football mentality about, there you go, oh, we need to get it all tomorrow because we're just the best things in the world, and just stick two fingers up at the kind of the system. I just think that's just kind of, it's a bit sad, really. And I think it's a real lack of kind of vision as to kind of how business works as a whole, and how you should be sort of kind of running, or how your club should be run. I mean, how can you turn around and say to you, you're really proud that basically you've gone out and sort of kind of in effect cheated possibly Southampton, or even, dare I say it, Leeds United, out of a place in the Premier League last season because you weren't running your club well? Because the argument is, if you didn't go out and spend all that money, you wouldn't have had all them players. So you would have probably got 4 points less than you would have done and got relegated last season. But you doing that is basically cheated somebody out of 150 million. Now, is that a right thing, Laney? I don't know. I mean, I do know. I think it's completely wrong. But I mean, what do you think?
Well, I mean, I watched the Gary Neville Carragher overlap thing as well, and I really enjoyed the conversation. And I thought what Gary Neville, Red Nev, said was really interesting. You know, he cited that Marinakis, the owner of Nottingham Forest, you know, his behaviour at the end of the Liverpool game where he lost right at the end of the game. He was down, almost pitch invading, intimidating the officials. The fact that they've hired Mark Clattenburg, former referee, to kind of, in brackets, advise, but probably more like influence the referees and advise the players. And you've got, you know, the players kicking off, and it's chaos down there. And you know, you add that to the amount of players that they brought during, in a build-up to and during that first season in the Premier League, everyone was going, this can't be right. This, you know, they needed to strengthen their team, but as you rightly said, you know, to what level to survive? And it's just the injustice of it all. You know, Burnley haven't gone out and done the same, and Sheffield United haven't. They've come up and they've clearly prove that they're not quite strong enough, and they probably will both go down, and they'll hopefully come back stronger and use the money to improve their team next season in a sustainably controlled, thoughtful, well-structured manner. And you know, that's not to say that they're both perfect either, probably, you know, but it's Forest clearly were being run in a very, very odd manner. No one has that turnover of players, and it stood out like a sore thumb. So, you know, it clearly didn't seem right, and financially it obviously wasn't right. So I just keep going back to my point. You know, you cheat, you get punished, and you take it on the chin.
And there are other opinions going around about Nottingham Forest, which will not be mentioned on this podcast, just because for legal reasons, you do not want to get Marinakis actually coming after you. But let's just say, you know, there may be other things going on as to reason why so much money may need to be spent. And I say allegedly, you know, may need to be spent in and around Nottingham Forest. Anyway, you know, just do a quick Google and you may find out what we're talking about there. But let's just move on about that, because let's talk about more positive things about Wembley. On Tuesday night, we had, well, Wembley on Saturday and Tuesday. On Saturday, England played Brazil in a game that I was at, and it was, I don't know what it looked like on TV, but everyone in the stadium was just like, oh, geez, I need to go home, because it just wasn't the one. We had a very good night after the game, me and the Blades, who were coming down in a few weeks' time, and Soups and Puns. I don't think Puns might have disappeared. Very late night till about 4 a.m, as we normally do. Our little King's Cross haunt, one of the places that we actually found after the Borough game with Lord Lou Can. That was good. It was much better, the post-match, than the game itself, and especially that Ivan Toney didn't come on for that Brazil game. However, the Belgium game, Ivan Toney was touted to be starting, and he did indeed, and he started for England, which was a very proud moment in itself. And then, you know, midway through the first half, Ivan Toney actually scored He got brought down for a penalty. He went down, and Ivan Tony style, and you know, he picked, and then he got up, and I remember everyone around me go, "Who's going to take it? Who's going to take it?" And me and Soup said, "Ivan Tony, of course." And they sort of look at us, thinking, "Who's he? Who's that bloke?" You know what I'm saying? And he came up and he scored the goal, and it was a tremendous moment. And me and Soups were the only two people in the whole stadium singing the Ivan Tony beats the goalie all night long song. We just sang it, you know, so which is all good. So yeah, we had a great night actually, which is good. And I thought the game was a good game as well. I mean, you know, last minute equaliser, and England's defence, big question mark, but forget about that. The fact that Ivan Tony has put himself on the map, you know, he played pretty well, his touches were good, and I thought it was, I mean, I haven't seen the game back like you would have seen it, and you would have heard the analysis from the commentators. I haven't heard any of that. All I've done is I've seen from behind the goal, and after time he was at the other end where you're sort of, you know, squinting your eyes trying to see what's going on. But in general, I thought it was good, mainly.
It was incredible, yeah. You know, you're right, you say, it's, you know, it was such a proud moment. You know, we talk about a lot the journey Brentford have come on, and you know, we never ever would have expected us, you know, some of us would never expected us to be in the top flight, but to have one of our players scoring a goal for England at Wembley was hairs on arms rising kind of stuff. You know, it seems surreal sometimes, you know. And Ivan's a little bit Marmite at times, and you know, with the betting ban and he's the impact of that on our season this year, and some of the things he said about us, you know, and the inevitable sale, it kind of gets a bit lost. But the magnitude of what a Brentford player has achieved, it should never be forgotten. And you know, seeing him step up, I had every faith in him. We've watched him score penalties week in, week out, and the pundits and the commentators, they all were singing his praises. And I think he continues to surprise people. Some of his link up play with the midfield, the way he drops deep, the way he knocks the ball back, and then he'll run into space and he'll be looking for a return. He'll be looking for service, and he'll get great service with some of those England players. You know, Mainoo, you know, and Jude Bellingham combined to set up the chance where Tony burst in and got in front of his man and was brought down. You know, it was a great move. There was other moments where I thought that Jarrod Bowen was getting in Ivan's way a little bit. They seemed to be kind of competing in that same penalty area space. I think Bowen was desperate to get his goal, which you kind of understand. He had a good, you know, a decent goal ruled out for offside, which would have turned the game around, you know, just after Ivan's penalty. So I just think he really did play his way into the Euro squad. I'm not quite sure what more he needs to do now. And Gareth Southgate is obviously criticised a lot of the time for being very safe in his selections. I think actually Ivan kind of helps him with that. I think, you know, he'll only be back up to Harry Kane if he's not injured. But he proved that he can lead the line. Ollie Watkins can do that as well. And you know, we love Ollie. You know, apart from his behaviour at the GTEC, the game a few months ago where He took exception for comments from one person, and he seemed to have sullied his reputation. But you know, they are the best and the finest strikers we've got in England, for England at the moment. And I think Kane, Watkins, and Tony should be confident that they're all going to be going to Germany. So I don't necessarily think it will be just two. I think he will take three because, you know, Harry Kane's fitness, you know, he hasn't been sort of, you know, consistently fit for the last few years. He's had time out, so, and he's getting on a bit, as they say. So yeah, it's I think Ivan will be in Germany, and I think he'll be in Germany and still be a Brentford player.
That's right. And I'm very much, as you know, looking forward to it. I've got all my tickets, got my Eurostars booked, about 74 Eurostars going there and back. As you do, you know, we've already been planning our trip, me and Puns and the soups and the breads and all that lot, actually. And we're very much actually looking forward to probably the most exciting part of the trip. We're looking forward to going to Wuppertal. And you know why we're looking forward to going to Wuppertal, Lainey? Guess what they've got?
I've got a clue.
Guess what they've got in Wuppertal that they should have had in Brentford? Just one thing.
Is it a monorail?
They've got a monorail. They've got a monorail in Wuppertal. And when we saw it, we were so excited. We just go, oh my God, no, this monorail was meant to be going to Lionel Road Stadium. And I don't know what happened to the plans on that one. However, we need to make sure that we get our monorail tucked. So we all get stuff packed. I've even booked a hotel in Wuppertal to make sure that, you know, just to get to, it's a late nighter on that one.
That's a good guess. That was a really good guess, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a very good guess, you know. And it's a bit of a weird monorail as well. Like, you know, I'm saying, there's all sorts of strangeness going on with it. So, very much looking forward to that. Yeah, probably more than I'm looking forward to the games, actually. So, in the group games anyway. So, which is all good. Also looking forward to the game against Denmark as well, which is in Frankfurt. There's going to be all sorts of characters there as well. I think my Danish chums have already been contacting me saying we're going to be meeting up in Frankfurt. So I think the night before the game and the night of the game are going to be quite lively.
I'll be over for that one.
Yeah, which is all good. So anyway, which is like I said to you, looking forward to that as well. Other than that, what else is going on? Any bees, the American bees out there, I should see you in Nashville. I know Lainey was going out to Aston Villa next week, but I cashed in my Villa ticket, and like I said to you, I'm going to be off to Nashville. So any bees, I'll see you next Saturday at 9 o'clock watching the Villa game, 9 o'clock in the morning watching the Villa game in front of the big screen. And I suppose probably where we are, we're going to have to be drinking Budweiser or something really horrendous on the beer front. But you know, but we'll have to we can make up with that, because after that we can go off and do what we want as well. And just want to give a big shout as well, there was a conference as well at Brentford Stadium on Wednesday, and Nitti Raj actually had a little intro on that as well, and there was a big Brentford contingent down there. Marcus Gale was down there as well. It was actually a grassroots football conference called Your Game Your Way. Oh, is it My Game My Way? Your Game Your Way, My Game My Way. I should know, shouldn't I? Because I was on the panel. And like I said to you, really good event. There was probably about 150 people there, different, you know, London FA, Middlesex FA, loads of good football people, grassroots people, people within diversity in football as well. But for me, I mean, just the reason why I just quickly mentioned it is just that it was really good to have it at Brentford Stadium. It shows that we put ourselves on the map. The amount of people that are, you know, that I knew or didn't know come up to me going, are you going to that event at Brentford Stadium in a couple of weeks' time? My game, your game, your way, or my game, my way. You're going to that. And I'm just like, well, yeah, I'm on the panel. So it kind of just, it's just opened Brentford up again to being a club which is doing things, positive things in different areas, but also, like I said, it's really, really reaching out. I mean, we had people that came down from St. George's Park to go to that, people that came down from Manchester. I think we had the Manchester City woman who's come down to that event as well. She works at Manchester City, Watford. Oh, yeah, I mean, maybe might have a laugh, actually. That's a bit of a joke as well, because I was on the panel, but then you had to go out into the audience and you had to sit with them and you had to do some sort of kind of, little workshop thing. And I happened to be put on, guess what team they put me on a table with, Lainey? What do you think?
Wasn't Leeds, was it?
No, it wasn't Leeds, actually. No, it wasn't
Forest.
No, it wasn't Forest either. No. Yeah, it's Fulham. I was on the Fulham table. I think there was some sort of joke going on there where they put me on the Fulham table, like, you know, so... Yes, and there was quite a few of them as well. So I think I offended myself quite well.
Fulham? Were they listening?
Well, the song that I was singing, actually, walking along, singing a song.
Yeah.
Well, to be honest with you, I don't think they were, actually. No. What I did notice is that they left about 10 minutes before the end. You know what I'm saying? All of them.
Oh, they probably heard that you were going to build a bonfire. That's probably why.
Yeah, so they did. I did crack a joke saying, actually, it was pretty silent on the table, which didn't go down particularly well.
They always leave it. They always leave it before the end anyway, don't they?
That's what I said. Yeah, they left 10 minutes before the end. Yeah, it's all good. But anyway, So listen, we've had a good chin mate talking about nothing there. There's one other thing that I want to talk about. This is not nothing because it's very important. We also had, and JB's going to talk about it a little bit later, the women's game as well, where Brentford women took on Ashmount Lee. Okay. They took on Ashmount Lee. Again, I should know because I was there. But again, it's funny because this international break, what you do is you get almost like a week or two off and then everything becomes a bit cloudy. So it was a really good day out again. The weather held up. There was actually a little bit of sun, even. Like you're saying, we had the two stands. Both stands were pretty full. There was a nice little vibe. And Brentford went out and they did the absolute business. They scored six goals. Ashmount Lee got their one goal. I'm not sure who got it right on the podcast here. I mean, I know that I said 9-1. And I think somebody else said 5-0 or 7-0 or something like that. But I don't know if anyone actually got 6-1 as well. But it was a really, really good day out. Again, like I said to you, good mix of people. You know, Brentford fans, non-Brentford fans, young sort of kind of, you know, girls, school girls, young footballers, girls and boys as well, plus, you know, older people. Just a really good mix and a really good day out. And I know there's a lot of people that may not have been able to make it for various reasons, but I know they're going to be doing this fairly regularly. And what I'll say to you is that you should definitely come down. You know, the football is good. They scored some wicked goals. I mean, there was a goal that was scored from, what was it, probably about 30, 35, 40 yards, lobbed the keeper as well. That was actually a wicked goal. So should definitely look out for that. And Brentford are actually on course, not on course, but to win the league. Not saying they will do, because the team at the top of the league, I think they've probably played about four or five games less than them. So they need to win all those games to come within a couple of points. But the key game is on the 21st of April, where they're playing Benfica. Okay, or East Benfica, whatever they're called, like I'm saying. And that's the key game. And I think whoever wins that game is going to win the league. So look out for that one, because I think it might be worth going down with. I think it should be quite lively. I'm not sure if it's home or away. I think Benfica play at Regent's Park if they play at their home. But if not, obviously Brentford play at Bedfont. So go and definitely check that out. Even though they might even move that game to down near you, down to Staines, I think it is. Because they play at Staines sometimes as well, don't they, Laney?
So
they might move that one. It's a bit of a BG. Like I'm saying, get the crowd behind and try and get the Benfica waking in their boots. So anyway, so come down to Benfica, Laney?
Yeah, I'll about that. Yeah.
Just get a plane, go to, you know, to Portugal and just, you know, go and see Benfica. But no, it's not them actually, it's another Benfica. Yes. Sorry. But anyway, listen, we've waffled on for far too long. We need to come back and actually focus our mind on the 9-game season. We're going to go away, we're going to come back, and unfortunately, we're going to have to talk about Burnley. Brentford played Burnley a couple of weeks ago now. It seems like an absolute eon ago. It was a game that was billed as a not lose game, not necessarily a must win, but a not to lose game. And unfortunately, it didn't go quite to plan, because Brentford lost against Burnley. And the Burnley fans were very happy. They're very excited. You cannot argue against the result, even though there were some mitigating circumstances that actually caused the result to happen, like one of our players getting sent off after 6 minutes, which does not help. And also in the second half, you know, there were certain things that happened, including a goal, which there's a big question mark, which is scored in, well, pretty much time added on. It's a big question mark as to whether or not that goal was a disallowed goal or not, but it stood. And things went against us, and we didn't get 3 points. And it was mightily disappointed. I have to put my hand up and say that I had a game with my Panthers girls up in Hertfordshire, so there's no way I was going to be able to get to Burnley on that day as well. But luckily, I met the Lambrusco, and we went locally in Berkhamsted, and we managed to get the laptop out, and we watched a game live in Berkhamsted amongst all sorts of characters, and they must have wondered what was going on with these Brentford fans jumping up and down in the middle of the boozer. But you were right in the middle of the mixer there, weren't you, Laney?
Yeah, the really long... It was a decent day out, to be honest with you. You know, as a day out of the football, a classic keep football out of football day. The game itself was really frustrating, and nothing seemed right. Anything that could not go our way seemed to not go our way, and it just it started off just in the most chaotic way with Sergio Reguilón being sent off. Inside the stadium, it looked, you know, we were confused because the referee, you know, waved play on, and we went from a situation where we were, you know, it was still 0-0 with 11 men, and the referee hadn't adjudged that to be a penalty. Then it was a penalty and a sending off, and we were 1-0 down, and it was just kind of, yeah, the game was tipped on its head. And to be fair, Brentford really, really did push, especially in the second half. They went hell for leather, and on another day, we would have got a point out of that. I thought we did well in the circumstances. I think Flecken got away with one where, you know, there was a lapse of concentration, didn't see someone lurking behind him, and, you know, on the stroke of half time we could have gone in down two. And then there was also another one where they cleared off the line, and it could have been 1-1. It was a lot of big opportunities that didn't go our way, or a lot of turning points that didn't go our way, and we came away with 0 points, and it was really concerning that our luck doesn't seem to change. Well, as we said in the intro, really, that the break came, you know, the international break came at a really good time, because, you know, undoubtedly the massive, massive silver lining out of all of that was Brian and Mbeumo coming back and starting and looking really bright and come on and kind of hide out on the wing and kind of try and kind of ease his way back in. He came on. And there's every reason to suggest that, you know, if he can stay fit, that he's going to impact the end of the season in the same way or a similar way to the way he impacted the beginning of the season, because he was on fire in those early weeks of the campaign, scoring, setting up, and he looked like well up for replacing Ivan Toney in that team. And, you know, the tragedy was that, you know, in the game that got turned over down in Brighton before Christmas was not only a defeat, we saw him get sidelined for months as well. So yeah, that was the silver lining for me. But we touched upon this on the intro, and as you just said, you know, there's 9 games now to kind of just focus upon, and we've got Man United on Saturday night, so they don't get a lot bigger than that. And I'm looking forward to a very GTEC.
Listen, the question, the Reguilón. Okay, so Reguilón gets sent off after 6 minutes. What was the view in the stadium? What were the thoughts in the stadium on that? Because I sort of kind of felt a lot of sort of anger emanating from that decision. Not from the referee or from anything else that's going on, but from Reguilón. Just thought, what the hell are you doing?
Yeah, there was that. I mean, I guess in... because we haven't really action replays to kind of look back upon, it looked like it's really weird as a fan, because you're watching it and then you see contact made right in front of us. It was right in front of the away fan section, and because the referee waves play on, you assume that there's nothing really to it wasn't a foul, you know, and it took several. It took several dozen rewinds to kind of get to a situation where the referee gave him a straight red. It wasn't even a booking, you know. It wasn't a booking. There was the thing that it got frustrating because of the double jeopardy. Not only it wasn't, you know, yes, it was a penalty. I don't think anyone's disputing that in hindsight. And Thomas Frank.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Completely matter-of-factly said, yes, it was a penalty and a sending off. But it was from play on, wave play on, to everything piling down on us, that seemed to be a big switch round, you know. Not just a penalty and a booking and 1-0 down. It was a penalty, a sending off and 1-0 down in the first 10 minutes of the game. And it was a big old shout. I think Reguilon has shown why he can't kick on to that next level at the bigger clubs he was at, you know, Tottenham and Man United. He does seem to be a bit of a liability. And I guess the plus side, if there is one, is that at least we've kind of tried before we bide. And I personally don't think if there is a chance of us signing him that we should. He seems to be very overvalued. And he's obviously he's better than having no left back or having people filling in. But you realise what Rico Henry, what a player he is compared to Sergio Reguilon. Rico Henry's in a different league. And if Reguilon is considered to be one of the best left backs in the Premier Division for Tottenham and for Man United to be giving him time, then you know where's Rico Henry in the kind of pecking order? I mean, it just shows you, you know, he should have got an England cap before he got injured, and what a tragedy it's been that we've missed him.
Yeah. So I mean, interesting. I mean, you're talking about the Reguilon and the vibe in the stadium. Let's go over to the fans. Let's see what they had to say about that Burnley match straight after the game.
You know, there's a lot to take out of that game. The first thing is we had a mountain to climb when Reguilon got sent off. The lad, he's obviously a young lad. He needs to have a long, hard look at himself after that, because he has basically put us in the shit there. I would say that defeat is on Reguilon's head. It's, from what I've heard, it was a ridiculous challenge. No chance of winning it. And you know, I just you can't do that. You can't survive for like 95 minutes with 10 men against 12. And once again, I come back to the refereeing decisions. The refs in this division are a fucking disgrace. I don't care what anyone says. Any of the apologists can do what they like, but the refereeing is appalling. Nothing wrong with that goal at the end.
Disappointing to say the least, but surely we must get the rubber green soon, because everything went against us today. You know, I'm not saying it wasn't a penalty, definitely, but sending off, I'm not sure. You know, that last 25 minutes gave us hope. We played as a team. We should have got something out of that game. The ref gave us nothing. We worked hard. We were fantastic. But we're going to do it.
We just need some confidence. We need that winning feeling back. And there isn't much of it at the moment, but there is positives. We'll be all right.
It's difficult. It's tight, without a doubt. We did say we must not lose this. But looking at Burnley's performance today, fair play to them. They have won it today. That early sending off clearly changed the whole dynamic. But the last 15-20 minute tactics by Thomas Frank was excellent to see. That power play has a risk with it, but Christ, we nearly got something out of that. And it almost was a lose game, but we didn't. We're going to get on with it. But I think we are still better than that bottom three.
They took all year to decide whether it's a foul or not. If it is, then fair enough, he has to go. But we try to get back into it at the end. When they were struggling against us when we brought on the subs at the end. Like, they were worried.
We were shit. Reguilon let us down. Silly foul at the start of the game. And it's cost the rest of the team, unfortunately.
The majority of people who aren't Brentford fans that tell me, you know, they think we are absolutely fine. And I think completely opposite. You know, I've watched, you know, performances like that against teams in and around us, below us today. What do we give? They wanted it more. Yes, we got a red card, and yeah, there's one goal in it, but I think they wanted it more from the minute one.
when you start that badly, and initially you think unluckily, I'll have to watch it back properly, but you feel very, very much hard done by. I don't quite know how they can call that last man when it's not clear and obvious, but it is what it is. And yeah, it is starting to make it a little bit tight down where we are at the moment. I'm not going to pretend that it's not, but we still did more than enough in that game to win it. I think that's the bottom line. We're making substitutions so late, and then we're looking so sprightly, so promising, and you're thinking, like, why haven't we done this sooner? We're more than better than them. We're making them look good at that point. We can blame it all we like on last-minute goals being disallowed and extra stoppage not being played when the keeper's gone down for a head injury he didn't even get. He's been told by his own teammates to go down with a head injury, tapping their head. But you can blame all those situations all you like, but bottom line is we had the chances in the game, as you said, with that chance, Wister's chance, that we could have turned it around. And instead, we end up going 2-0 down. We give ourselves a mountain to climb with already exhausted players. They've been playing, most teams play 10 aside last 30 minutes of a game, last 20 minutes of a game. We played a full 90 plus with a man down. I think they played amazing given that circumstance, but we've got no one to blame for ourselves for not taking the chances that we were given.
There you go, fans, after the Burnley game, fairly resigned to, fairly resigned, sort of, like I said, a little bit of anger emanating there as well. And there's all sorts of sort of kind of in the stadium, something that probably haven't seen for a while, where you've got the sort of characters being kind of sort of, like, sort of taken out and just, you know, spoken to, and just kind of just anger brimming over a little bit, you know, which you do get frustrating time. I mean, it doesn't only happen at Brentford, it happens at, you know, Everton, I've heard it's been happening, Nottingham Forest, I've heard it be sort of kicking off and stuff like that. I think probably, you know, probably Sheffield United, they're probably so resigned to going down, you probably don't get that happening there, but you felt a little bit of that sort of kind of frustration, did you, Lainey?
Yeah, very, very much so. Yeah, especially towards the end where we thought we'd equalised. You know, Ivan Toney was adjudged to have fouled the goalkeeper, where he was in the air already, and the goalkeeper would have been basically jumping up into his armpit, and it looked like the ball was going in anyway. To be honest, it looks like the goalkeeper had misjudged the cross and the flight of the ball, and he'd reacted a bit late. So, yeah, there was this. I celebrated as if we'd equalised, because again, it was literally right in front of me, and I didn't see it. I can see why it was given as a foul, but again, you know, maybe that goes to VAR and they give us something. Yeah, we tried really, really hard. And yeah, there was frustration at the end, because it was just a case of what might have been. I thought we deserved at least a point from that. I think if the game goes on for another 10 minutes, we probably do get a point out of that. I don't think the players could have tried any harder second half, but, you know, we travelled a long way, and not that counts for anything, but it was a long day out to kind of suffer like yet more misfortune. And I think the tide has to turn at some stage. I think we've had our fair share of unfortunateness, and I just want us to get at least 90 minutes where we can defend really solidly, we can take the chances that our XG is creating, and we can look at a fairly easy Aussie win where, you know, at both ends of the pitch things have gone to our advantage and we've got 3 points, and then it just takes a lot of pressure out. I mean, 1 3-point haul isn't going to be safe, isn't going to mean safety all on its own, but I think the whole mood around the camp is that, you know, we can win again. It seems a long time since that Wolves game, and the Forest game seems even longer ago. So, three points will change everything. But got a tough two games ahead of us. Well, tough three games ahead of us. Things don't get any easier. Man United, Brighton at home. Then we've got a trip to Aston Villa. All really, really tricky fixtures.
Yeah, definitely tricky fixtures. Look, I mean, let's just have a look at see where Burnley and Brentford kind of fared on the pitch as well. Burnley, they were effective at creating goal-scoring opportunities through balls, and also goal-scoring opportunities from the flanks, and they were strong at finishing. This is from whoscored.com as well. They were caught offside often, which was their weakness. For Brentford, we stole the ball often from Burnley and also created goal-scoring opportunities from set pieces, but we were aggressive and we were also caught offside often. The top performers was Muric as well for Burnley, got 7.9 as well. Then you got Aya, 7.5. Matthias Jensen got 7.5. And then Odubert, 7.3. And Jakob Larsson as well got 7.3. So it gives you a vibe. I'll tell you something as well, because we did a, what was a player of the match as well. Didn't we lay a, I don't know if you remember, I think it was Aya as well that won the player of the match, wasn't it?
Yeah, he did.
So again, so we got the Besotted Global Player of the Match, which is done by the Tasmanian Bee as well, who's coming over very soon. I think he might even be here for the Brighton game, but he's definitely here for the Sheffield United game, because him and his crew are going to be down the globe. His whole family are going to be down there. The globe is just tucking right into all sorts of globe action. So yeah, it's good to see the old Tasmanian Bee come all the way over from Tasmania. Somebody actually said to me today, I said to you, the Tasmanian Bee's coming over. And he said, is there such a thing? And I just went, yes, there is. And he went, amazing. You know what I'm saying? So, so people, if you just sort of kind of just get that into your mind, basically, we have somebody coming over from Tasmania, Brentford fan with his whole family, to come and watch a couple of Brentford games. And that is the kind of thing that kind of happens in this new Brentford era. So Aya was top boy in that game. Jan Out finished second, and Mbeumo finished third as well. That's Aya's first man of the match of the season, and his 14th player of the to actually win man of the match this season. We keep talking about how many different players have won player of the match, man of the match this season, which probably goes to show you how many changes have probably been in the side. We've had to just keep on just kind of sort of kind of refreshing, like, you know, get the turnstiles going to get another player in. And oh no, he's just won man of the match because he's just no match left on the pitch. But, you know, so which is all good. But so I mean, just coming back just quickly, briefly about that Burnley game, Laney. Look, result didn't go according to plan. First half was a bit frustrating, but probably I'd say second half, it showed signs that you're sort of thinking, actually, you know, this is kind of what we need to see Brentford performing like towards, you know, the back end of the season, in this 9-game season. Is that right?
Yeah, look, you know where I stand on this. It's that, you know, very... We've been in an awful run, but it's only a handful of those games where we've looked like completely out of our depth and swamped. The beginning of the game at West Ham kind of highlighted that, and, you know, the beginning of the second half away at Tottenham, where, you know, we look so fragile. But then in most of the games, we still look potent coming forward. And there's enough about us, I think. Now we've got Brian Mbeumo. Sharda looks like he's going to be contending quite soon. I'm not quite sure with one or two of the others whether Hickey's going to be out until right towards the end, or whether Pinnock has been a lot quiet, not a lot of noise about where Ethan Pinnock is. We miss him a lot. There still seems to be enough about us with games against some of those below us to come where, you know, if we don't win them all, if we just take points off of them, it's almost, you know, it's almost a job done there as well. But I'm not looking at, in my eyes, I'm not looking at a relegated team. So it's not the too good to go down mentality. I'm just kind of like just saying as it is. I'm not looking at my team thinking they're just awful. They're better than that. They're way better than that. Just as I keep saying, just want us to get a bit of luck to go our way, and, you know, everything's going to be okay. We're long overdue that.
Yeah. Just quickly, just talking on the XG front as well. There's no bees breakdown this week because it's not an American holiday, but there's just on a bit of a chill tip. But they'll be back for the next week's games as well. But 2.77 was the expected goals for Burnley, 1.16 for Brentford. So, you know, Burnley actually created sort of some fairly decent high opportunity chances there as well. So, you know, some people may argue to say that we actually probably got away with 2-1, and it probably could have been 3-1 as well. So, you know, or could it be 3-2, depending on whether or not you count that final goal as a, or non-goal as a goal as well. So, like I said to you, still work to be done. But like I said to you, a few games that we're on. And I tell you what, you know, listen, we can only do what we're going to do. And as JB will say, because we've got JB coming up now with some facts and funk, JB is looking at the positive side of Brentford. He's talking about penalties. He's talking about Ivan Toney. He's talking about internationals. He's talking about all sorts of stuff as well. And record standing women's games attendances, which is and all sorts of stuff. So listen, let's go to JB. Let's have a listen to his facts and his funk.
Are you ready for this? I told you it was coming. Hello, Jonathan Birchall here again. This week, we finally saw something that no Brentford fan has ever seen in our 135-year history. One of our players scoring a goal for the England national team. We had seen Ivan score a penalty in that goal at that end of Wembley in the playoff final 3 years ago. But he hadn't actually taken a competitive penalty for the last 50 weeks. That was in our game with Newcastle last April, when he scored one, but also did the unthinkable, and missed one too. Staying with penalties, by this stage of a Thomas Frank season, we would normally have been awarded an average of 5 penalties. This season we've had just 2, neither of which were at the G-Tech. It's the first time in this millennium that we've reached this stage of a season and not yet been awarded one at home. And going into Saturday's game, not only is that stat against us, but it's also in our previous 15 league encounters with Manchester United, we've never been awarded a penalty. Back to our last league action and our trip to Burnley. Unless you travelled to Turf Moor for our games in 1935 or 1996, then you've not seen a win in the other 14 visits we've made in League and Cup. It was, however, great to see Brian Mbeumo back after 13 Premier League games out. When he came on, he was reunited with Ivan Toney. It had been 315 days since they'd both been on the pitch together. That was back on the 6th of May last year at Anfield. On the flip side, there was the red card. It's been just over 10 years since we last had a loanee sent off. Coincidentally, another left-back, Jake Bidwell. He, of course, then went on to sign permanently for us and make over 100 appearances, and will be playing in this year's FA Cup semi-final for his current side, Coventry City, against Saturday's visitors, Manchester United. Last Saturday saw Brentford's women's team win at the G-Tech. The crowd was 4,856. Excluding behind closed doors games, that was a higher attendance than the men's team has had for over 250 home league matches in the last 40 years.
So there you go, JB, Fats and Funk. And JB was on a right mission there, wasn't he, Laney? He was weaving in and out of all sorts of Fats and Funk business.
He's certainly got his facts book out, hasn't he? He's done well, the kid JB this week. Thank you as always. Appreciate all that.
That's right, much appreciated. But listen, Saturday, got a match. We are playing Manchester United. It's a late kickoff, it's 8 o'clock kickoff. And I think lots of characters are quite up for it. There's been a bit of a flurry on the old WhatsApp rings on the tickets, sort of people flying around, sort of people left, right and centre. You know, we thought Easter weekend there'd be a lot of people missing in action, so they won't be there, but there seems to be lots of people to replace them and take their place. So I think it's going to be quite lively at New Griffin Park on Saturday night, actually under the lights. And like I said to you, this is going one stage further, because we're not talking about the 5:30 kickoff, which is normally fairly lively. We're talking about the 8 o'clock one, which is going to be absolutely potty for it. Tell you what we're going to do. We're going to go away, we're going to come back, and we're going to talk about Manchester United. Man United coming to New Griffin Park, and they're going to be looking back at last season thinking, oh no, not them lot again. Because we did them good and proper at our stadium last season. To be fair, when we went up to theirs, we looked like we were going to do them good and proper up at their place. Was that last season? Was that earlier this season? That's earlier this season, actually, wasn't it? Was it?
Yeah, it was October.
That's right, it was on October, actually. So since we played Man United back in the last season, and then we've gone up to their place earlier this season, looked like we were going to do them good and proper. We were 1-0 down in the 90th minute, and then McTominay came on. Very famously scored 2 goals in a very short space of time and denied us 1 point to us 3 points. It was a very sad moment. However, you know, what that says to me, and I think, you know, what it says to a lot of people, and looking at Manchester United, they're one of these teams that they're always, always beatable. They've got a number of things going on. It's interesting. You've got Christian Eriksen, who was very well loved down at Brentford, but then he decided to make a move to go up to Manchester. And I think it's fair to say that, you know, it's not been the honeymoon that he's expected it to be. And that the vibes that I'm getting is that he kind of wants to leave and maybe just go elsewhere, because he's not getting the game time that he's getting. And part of the reason why he wanted to come back was he wanted to get the game time so that he can get into the Danish national side and he could be an integral part of the Danish national side, because obviously that's a big thing for him at the moment now. So like I said to you, it's not all sort of swimmingly, it's not all going down particularly well in Manchester. However, they do eke out little results here and there, and I think on Saturday we just have to make sure that we're not one of these teams where Manchester United all of a sudden bang, they get on it and they eke out a result in it, Laney.
Yeah, we can't take what happened for granted last season. They'll want to come and get some kind of revenge. But, you know, that Jensen goal up at Old Trafford, I thought it looked like, well, we were under the cosh, weren't we, at the end. But it looked like we were going to hold out. And then, you know, Scott McTominay came and it literally burst the bee's bubble. And not just one, with two. We come away with nothing. But Man United come on a little bit of a wave. You know, they'll still be buzzing off of the FA Cup win 2 weekends ago, where they scored in the late knockings of extra time against Liverpool, and the euphoria around the stadium was palpable. You could feel that. And, you know, just seeing, you know, the way Robbie Maynou performed for England, he looks in great form, and we've got a lot to be concerned about everywhere. It seems a long time ago now that Christian Eriksen played for us. It was, you know, I guess it was. But, you know, will he be given a good reception? It's unlikely. So I think there'll be quite a few cold drinks consumed before kickoff. I think there's going to be a real kind of pit of an atmosphere at the G-Tech, and I encourage people to come down to the Globe beforehand and kind of to join in that kind of match preparation. You know, we go through a very, very strategic match prep, don't we, Bill? You know, we've got coaches, we've got drink coaches that come in and help us before games, just to get lubricated, stretched, ready for action. So
the sleep coaches as well, sometimes for people after the match as well.
especially on the train home, Bill.
That's right, depending how good the match is, actually. And like I said to you, the weird thing that we have about how it goes is that the later the kickoff, it's always the earlier the start. So if there's a 3 o'clock kickoff, we kind of get down the pub maybe about 1 o'clock in the afternoon if you can do. But if it's a 5:30 kickoff, we kind of try and meet up at 11. But there's all sorts of ridiculous plans for the 8 o'clock kickoff, like I was saying. So yeah, it just gives you more things to do during the day, which is sort of kind of geared towards Brentford. So I think we may start in Richmond again on Saturday. We hasn't been focused on it. We haven't even thought about it as yet. You know what I'm saying? I'm sure Q. No. Will be involved as well. We don't normally do the queue unless we've got a good patch to do the queue as well. But maybe we might even, you know, tuck into Brentford as well, like, you know, a bit old school. So we'll just do the full Monty. So I'm very much looking forward to it, actually.
Well, we did before the Man United. I mean, maybe we ought to do exactly what we did before the Man United game last year. Well, you know, I know the weather's not going to be the same. It was roasting. It was a roasting August day, or early September day, and we met at Strand on the Green, and we had a few drinks down there, and remember we got quite merry, actually.
Yeah.
We went off to the game and kind of just couldn't believe our eyes that we were 4-0 up before the break, and it was dream time. So come down, people. Yeah. Straight, it'd be nice to meet a few of you that fancy a drink with us before the game or after the game, and just make a bit of a big Brentford Saturday night of it, to be honest.
That's right. And the back room and the Besotted Den at the back as well. Just come on down, which is all good. But anyway, listen, we're talking about sort of kind of, you know, there's no football being talked about at all, actually. No. We need to just get a bit of football knowledge about Manchester United, because if they're going to come down and cause us a few problems, we need to know about it. We got Vicky, otherwise known as General Outburst. She's going to give us the lowdown on Manchester United.
Hi, my name is Vicky and I am Witterbird84 on the X, and I've been a Man United fan since I was in the womb. Literally, my mum took me to Old Trafford back in the day when I was in her tummy.
What's the vibe like at Man United at the moment? You must be buzzing from that cup win against Liverpool a couple of weekends ago. It's a very, very different contrast to the game at Brentford last season, isn't it?
I think the vibe's pretty good. Going on that Liverpool game sort of has the vibes of last season when we beat Liverpool and then we all sort of gelled together. Say we, United, gelled together, and then things like that sort of made things more successful, because obviously that was after the last Brentford game, which I don't really want to talk about, but I guess we're going to talk about it.
So describe that defeat, you know, 4-0 down at half time. It must have been just awful to be watching that as a Manchester United fan. 4-0 to Brentford.
It was the beginning of the season, that loss, and the team just hadn't been forming. It was a mismatch, but it was just a nightmare that game. And I think when me scored, I think it was like the 35th minute. That's when, yeah, it was just carnage. De Gea, that goal. Oh dear, Eriksen, like, pretty much gave it to him. Oh my dear. And but Brentford, yeah, gave him quite the momentum for the rest of the season. And it definitely was a lesson learned that day, wasn't it?
You got out of jail up at Old Trafford this season as well. Matty Jensen had put us a goal up, and it looked like anything that you chucked at us was going to be defended. Then Scott McTominay came and flipped the game on its head, scored two goals right in the depths of injury time. What did you think about that?
Oh yeah, reliving that game for a minute there. It was just like nothing was happening. We didn't have a striker at the time that was like match ready. Scott McTominay was just there last minute, and then he went, fine, take the draw, and then boom. And it was like, yeah, it was one of those games that Manchester United seem to do best at the moment, is have these last minute impact goals. It's a shame that it has to come to that sometimes, but what are you going to do about it other than just get more players and get the squad fit enough? And that's the problem that Manchester United have been having.
Tell us about Robbie Mainoo. He's having an incredible impact on the Man United team, and obviously the England debut he made this week against Belgium has got the world talking about him. Is there kind of really massively high hopes for him, and who else should we be scared about?
Mainoo is just something special. His calmness, his composureness, it's sensational, and only from such a young lad. I'm a bit nervous thinking that he might be played too much, like obviously playing the whole 70 minutes for England and just being pretty much their star boy for that. I think Garnacho is definitely someone to be watching out for, but same, he's also been playing a lot, and they both look tired in the second half. Definitely think Hoyland's back, so definitely a threat there. He's such a good striker for such a young age. Really lucky with that one. Such potential that Manchester United have in the future. Hopefully we get to get keeper Ten Hag for it, because he'll be one of the best people to bring out the youth, because he done that with Ajax. And then obviously the best thing that Ajax did was like be a football factory, because they sell all the young players off.
Are the Manchester United supporters excited about the Jim Ratcliffe takeover? You know, after years of campaigning against the Glaziers, what are your hopes and the expectations of Ratcliffe and the different regime from the one you've been so anti for so many years?
I think any involvement with the Glaziers has been pulled away from Old Trafford. That is not seen nothing but a good thing. Of course, I think everybody would like to see the Glaziers out, but this is a time period of just slowly dragging them out and taking the football decisions away from them, which is so important, because they can't make football decisions. They practically only make signings over how many likes they have on Instagram and do weird contracts. But a new stadium, by the sounds of it's coming along, and then when people were hearing about the government putting money into Old Trafford, it's actually not Old Trafford, it's actually the housing areas and other things surrounding them, because I don't think Jim Ratcliffe and Ineos should be paying for the housings around Old Trafford, but it definitely needs an upgrade, and that's definitely where the government should help that community. But yeah, it's nice to see some actual football people coming in with like football minds rather than ex-bankers with their favourite sport is rugby. I think it's all seen as good, except for these rumours about Gareth Southgate, which is just horrible, in all honesty. I'm not a fan. Gives you a big pit in the stomach, especially when you hear from the right people that, yeah, they are really considering it. And I don't really want to have a manager that got Middlesbrough relegated.
So what are you expecting from Brentford on Saturday night? Is the game about just about revenge from last season, or are you expecting a lot more than that as a Manchester United fan?
What I expect in the game is it's just going to be carnage, just pure carnage. I feel like it's just going to be midfield against midfield, bringing yours up, probably you go into the back three rather than have a back four. Manchester United still having our injuries come back, but Onana seems to have got better in formation because his confidence is up and he's a confidence player. So hopefully, I really think it's going to be a pretty good game. Really excited for it. A late night on a Saturday can even break your weekend, can't it? Ruin your Saturday night, or it can make it. So yeah, looking forward to it. Really thinking that it might be 3-2 to United. I expect goals.
So there you go, the general outburst. Vicky's giving us a general outburst there about Manchester United. And make you nervous, Lane, or are you just you kind of chilled with it?
I'm actually quite chilled. I've been chilled most of the season, and to be honest, even in the most stressy times. But yeah, I'm thinking we get something out of this, to be honest with you. I think there's a good chance. I just kind of look into Ivan and Brian, and obviously the concerns, what we do at left back, because Sergi is out, suspended. He's got some decisions to be made there, Thomas. But if you listen to his piece on the Brentford official site, he did a kind of a video kind of update, it wasn't really a rally in the troops, but he kind of, he underlined the fact that, we need to make it a fortress on Saturday, and how Brentford players that they'll give their all, and we need to kind of get behind them. And yeah, it was a timely kind of like update. And he doesn't often get his tactics wrong. Obviously they've got some standout players, and if they all perform to their very highest potential, then we're going to get beaten again. But we do seem to have a knack of getting the tactics right against the big teams, and although they sometimes, if not always, this season have ended in defeat, at least whether that be at Man United, Man City away, or Arsenal away, we've made them work for their victories. We've not rolled over, and even the one at Tottenham in the end was really tight. So yeah, I've got belief in our team still, and I think we're going to do okay, mate.
Yeah, I'm just looking at where Manchester United are strengths and weaknesses. They're strong at coming back from losing positions and also protecting the lead. But where they're weak, finishing scoring chances, stopping opponents from creating chances, fouling in dangerous areas, aerial duels, defending counter-attacks, defending set pieces, and they're very weak at avoiding offside. So, I mean, there's quite a lot for us to get our teeth into there, isn't it, Laney?
Yeah, and I think the game up at Old Trafford kind of just highlighted the fact that, the two goals in the end came from a fairly unusual source. Scott McTominay, although he was on good form at the time, we did well to kind of mark the true danger men. But then there's always someone that comes deeper, and with fresh legs, he came on and he made a big difference. And the Flecken, to be honest with you, wasn't at his in his best form at that time, it was a game where we were just properly kicking ourselves afterwards, weren't we?
Yeah, definitely kicking ourselves, but hopefully no kicking of ourselves on Saturday. God knows what the weather's going to be like, but like I said to you, you know, hopefully the sun will be shining before the game on us and just give us some positive rays, because we need them, like I said to you, because we need to get, you know, a couple of games under our belt and then boom, we're done and we can relax, I believe, for the rest of the season. Just forget about them point deduction things. Let's just put it, concentrate on what's going to happen in our own camp. The other thing, like I said to you, I know we've got Sheffield United, we've got Bluton, which are going to be proper kind of heart and mouth games. I believe they will be, but I just believe that knowing Brentford, how the way that we operate, we'll end up losing the game that we don't expect to win. Losing the game that we expect to win, and then we'll end up winning the game that no one expects us to win, and that's so Brentford. So maybe let's start on Saturday with Man United, and let's win the game that no one really expects us to win in the form that we're in at the moment now. Laney, I'm going
to
ask you.
Yeah, we have to. We have a score prediction. I'm going to go 2-1 Brentford.
Oh, you nicked my score predictions. I'm going to go even pottier than that. I'm going to go 3-2 to the mighty, mighty bead, knowing that our defensive prowess is to be desired as it is. But, you know, we've got an extra striker on now. We're going to have Brian on the pitch now. So I'm thinking goals at half-time, goals at full-time.
Can I correct myself?
Oh,
I dug out Flecken then. Strakosha was in goal.
Oh.
Out of there. So apologies to Mr. Flecken. Yeah. And anyone that's shouting at me now, I don't know what you're about, it's Strakosha. So I got it wrong. There you go.
It was all his fault, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. So but it doesn't change your score prediction, does it, Laney?
No, it doesn't at all.
No. So 2-1 and the 3-2, so we go. So we'll see how it goes. But anyway, this is the Besotted Pride of West London podcast. Thanks for thanks for listening. I really appreciate everybody listening out there. Like I said to you, to subscribe on all good podcast channels and buy us a beer, besotted.com/beer. And thank you to everyone that's bought us a beer so far, which is all good. I'm going to be in Nashville in a week from today, pretty much. So like I said to you, so you can buy us a beer out there. Actually, if you see you, we'll be watching all sorts of football out there as well. But like I said to you, we've got the Brighton game. We actually might just do a little mini pod before the Brighton game, so look out for that on Pride of West London. But I'm Billy Grant, I'm in the house here, and we've got Laney in the place.
Good afternoon
to you too. We're going to go Manchester United. We're going to be out very early. If you're going to be in Richmond, you're going to win Q.
Yeah, come on, UBs.
Speak them Red Devils. Come on, UBs. Red Devils, they're going to be so devilish. We're going to beat them. UBs.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.